Do we have enough members of the committee that such that we can start with the meeting?
Currently, as it stands, it's yourself, Ms. Abraham, Mabiletsa, Morolong, Hill Lewis, Floyd Chivambu, voted Wessels, and then Zanele Nkomo sent an apology. She is ill. She can't make it today. So currently, there's 7 members, so it's enough to proceed, Chair.
I think we should start with the meeting because we also have a tight schedule this afternoon in the National Assembly. There are 2 matters for debate. Welcome, honorable members, and also wish Honorable Nkomo a speedy recovery. Today, the focus will be on the deliberation on the Disaster Management Tax Relief Bill and Disaster Management Tax Administration Bill. The meeting is officially open. You are all welcome. And then in regard to apologies, we got an apology of Honorable Zanele Nkomo. And then who else has apologized?
For now, that's it, Chair.
Okay. That's the apology that we have. Is Treasury here so that we can move to the next item? The next item is the briefing by National Treasury and SARS on the motivation to comply with Section 8, Subsection 5, and Section 11, Subsection 3 of the Money Bill. Amendment Procedure and Related Matters Act 209 for amending the Disaster Management Tax Relief Bill B11 2020. Over to you, Treasurer.
Thank you, Chair and Honourable Members. Good morning. I suppose I must put my camera on. Let me just go. Chair, so what we've done today is we've firstly, as you know, as you've outlined, we've got to show how we comply with the Money Bills Procedure Act because we've made amendments, and that relates to the changes that we've made to the COVID Money Bills Act or the Tax Act, and for the administrative portions, there's a different approach. Now, I think members have the letter that's been circulated from the minister because in terms of the Money Bills procedure, the minister has to indicate that he concurs with changes, and that just makes the process much easier. But so you've got, I think, a few documents. One, we've got just an explanation of the changes. And 2, we've got the A-list and the bill, I think, has revised. But I'm going to ask Yanga to come in and make that input because it's a pretty technical process now that we have to just guide members on. Chair, I should just make the point just before questions come up. And I think we'll also just, we may not have circulated the media statement that we also issued on the 31st, and though that's related to the TLAB, we indicated that the approach that we're taking is that we are making the changes that we need to make on an urgent basis by, for example, deferring or extending the tax deferrals for certain measures from what was 4 months to 6 months. So we're doing this in this bill. We've also dealt with the alcohol and tobacco excise duty payments, but members did raise a number of other measures. Now, tomorrow, Chair, we are doing the Tax Laws Amendment Bill and the Tax Administration Laws Amendment Bill, and what we said is those measures that will only for most taxpayers become an issue when they file their returns and they are assessed. those can be left to the second round of TLAB. So, for example, there were issues on various other, we can outline, but for example, members had asked about the travel arrangements, working from home, and so on and so on. Those measures will respond to broadly tomorrow, but we will be releasing a second round of TLAB. So I want to just appeal to members to just separate, I think, the two issues, and that today's votes are therefore just restricted to the COVID relief measures that we took and deferrals. But Yagna, can you come in, and because you'll be far more accurate than what I've outlined. Yanga?
Okay. Thank you, Momo. Thank you, Chair. Good morning, Honourable Members. As Honourable Chair has said, we have to motivate in terms of Section 85113 of the Money Bills Amendment Procedure and Related Matters Act. We have submitted their motivation because the change that we are proposing in terms of the Money Bills Procedure Act is the extension of the following COVID-19 tax relief measure, streamlined special tax dispensation for funds established to assist with COVID-19 disaster relief. We are extending up to 30 September 2020. Previously, it was 4 months from 1 April 2020 to 31 July 2020. So in terms of this proposal, we request Parliament, the Minister has requested Parliament to extend to 30 September 2020. And therefore, in terms of Section 11.3, we have to say what is the potential impact of these amendments. And also Section 8.5 of the Act requires that the amendment considers the impact on the fiscal framework, including elements of revenue expenditure and borrowing. The only policy change is the extension of the relief measure. The only change is the extension of the relief measure dealing with the streamlined tax dispensation for funds established to assist COVID-19 relief efforts. As these funds will have qualified for tax exemption in terms of the current provisions of the Income Tax Act, the extension of the tax list is tax neutral and does not result in any additional direct cost to government. I think Advocate Jenkins maybe is trying to contact me. Maybe Advocate Jenkins, do you want to say anything in terms of this before I can continue?
No, I'm sorry. I'm just returning a call. I see I've got a few missed calls, so I was just participating. Please continue. I'm sorry, Honourable Member.
Okay, Advocate Jenkins. I thought you were calling me about this because I was calling you to say that we have submitted everything. So as we are of the view that we have submitted this, there is no revenue impact because this extension, in terms of this provision, the COVID-19 relief funds would have qualified for tax exemption in terms of the current provisions of the Income Tax Act. So this extension is tax neutral. Thank you, Chair. I don't know whether I must continue and go to the actual proposed amendments in the relief bill.
Chair, do you want us to continue to go on to the bill? Maybe Yanga, you should continue then.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Momo. The amendment in the Disaster Management Tax Relief Bill, it's clause 7 of the bill, whereby we are postponing the effective date from 31 July 2020 to 30 September 2020. And clause 8 of the bill, whereby we are postponing the effective date from 31 July 2020 to 30 September 2020, as well as clause 9 of the bill, whereby we are postponing the effective date from 31 July 2020 to 30 September 2020. Those are the amendments in the Disaster Management Tax Relief Bill. Other amendments are in the Disaster Management Tax Relief Administration Bill, of which Frank Thomas will be dealing with them. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks. Are we done with presentations from Treasury, Momo and Kuta?
I think we're done for now, Chair. We've come on the actual amendments, but I think Franz Tomasek is coming from SARS because the Edmund Burke issues are also there.
Is he coming now or is he coming at
the IT? He's waiting to come, Chair.
Okay. Franz, you can also brief the comments.
Great. Thank you very much, Chair. So because this is not a monthly bill, we're not part of the memorandum that was submitted by the Minister of Finance, although we are covered in the covering letter that he provided along with the memorandum. So essentially, if you look at the A list that has been provided, you'll see that the amendments that are proposed there in Clause 2 are aimed at the extension that was suggested at the last time we briefed the committee. So we're changing the closing date for the relief from 31st of July to the 31st of August. Then we are changing the beginning of the repayment period from the 7th of September to the 7th of October. And then the close of the repayment period moves on from the 5th of February to the 5th of March next year. Whilst going through the bill, we noticed two minor cross-referencing errors. So we are also proposing that those be corrected, and those would be the changes that are suggested for clauses 3 and 4. And that's it from my side. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thanks, Franz. Honorable members, that's the presentation from National Treasury and SARS in regard to those bills. If honorable members would like to make comments and ask questions, they can so indicate. Alan, you will assist me in identifying members who would like to make comments and questions.
Yes, I'll send it to you via WhatsApp, but on the chat line, it's Hill Lewis has a question.
Thanks. Honorable Lewis, over to you.
Thank you, Chairman, and thanks to Treasury and SARS. Mine is a new issue, probably for France and Momo, but anyone can take it. And that is, I just wanted to ask whether you have considered adding relief in these bills for expat workers who usually spend 183 days outside of South Africa and because of lockdown have not been able to return to their places of work and have been stuck in South Africa and therefore will not meet the 183-day requirement this year. I'm sorry I didn't raise this earlier, but I have received a huge number of queries about this, as I'm sure that you have as well, because a lot of the mails that I've been getting, I see that you, National Treasury and SARS, are copied in on it. So I just want to check where you guys are on this. Are you considering offering this kind of relief? And if so, can we include it now in this legislation? Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Lewis. Who's next from your side, Alan?
Nobody else, Chair. It was only Hill Lewis.
This morning, while I was listening to one SABC radio station, there was an interview. They were interviewing a chairperson of, I think they call themselves National Association of Independent Schools. They are having very serious problems, and they were saying that they are intending to approach government, like what the taxi industry and other industries did, because up to so far, only 20% of parents are able to honor payments in regard to school fees and other related fees. So they are finding it very, very difficult to sustain their schools, to find that most of the independent schools can close. but I'm not saying that you have to respond to it now. But I'm showing you the pressure that many sectors are facing. Because that chairperson was indicating that they had to slash salaries of the teachers. They have to do lots of cuts in various areas. And that association represents more than 1,000 plus schools, which means which translates into thousands and thousands of learners and hundreds of teachers and other, I mean, service providers and whosoever is related to those schools. So our problems are getting more and more on a daily basis. And this Momo France and Ms. Mputa Yanga, it's happening against the background of what we are witnessing in provinces, in particular from departments of health. What we read on a daily basis in regard to procurement of PPEs is quite distressing. You come here, we have to pass bills, we do things in a hurry, not following the normal procedure, understanding that we are in a state of disaster. But you look at the tenders that are being awarded, at companies that have just been formed a few months ago, people who are not registered in the chemical industry are awarded those tenders. And you ask yourself, what's happening? And this is the money that was supposed to be assisting industries that are in dire need of that money, rather than just wasting money on companies which surely do not even qualify to be on the database, let alone picking up companies which are not in the database to be awarded the PPE. All these colleagues are related, because here we talk money and we can't keep quiet when all these things are happening. So you can respond to that question that has been raised by Honorable Lewis, and Alan, you will indicate before we move to the next item if there are members who would like to make comments. Over to you, Treasurer and SAS.
Okay, Chair. Chair, I think let me also just deal with the comments that you've made. Look, I think we've said, Chair, this COVID is, an economic, a pandemic has caused not just a health disaster, but an economic disaster. And obviously the measures that we've put in place will never ever compensate people for all the losses that our people have suffered. It's literally impossible. Obviously, the measures that we're dealing with today were the measures that we announced in March and April. In fact, before the first lockdown, we made that first set of announcements. And so we're just giving effect, legal effect, to what decisions we took in March and April, together with just extending the same measures for another 2 months or so. We'll deal with that more precisely in the legislation. So, Chair, we're definitely not going to compensate, and in fact, the comments, whether it's the restaurant industry, whether it's the rest of the hospitality industry, whether it's, you know, gyms, whether it's other small businesses, whether it's your independent schools, I think that all of them would have suffered a huge loss in income. And clearly, for some of the measures that we have may help, so they too can enjoy the benefits, I would presume, that we have in the tax system, which is effectively like an interest-free loan. There is a loan guarantee scheme as well, but again, that's a loan, not an income. And Chair, just on that, I would say we'd love to come and brief the committee. I know the Committee on Small Business has scheduled a session where they want Treasury to come, and we'd we are ultimately, we see our primary responsibility to the finance committee. We would like the opportunity to brief you on that credit guarantee scheme. It would be nice if we could do it jointly with small business development, but that's up to you, Chair. They have called us next week. So there's measures like those. And then, of course, there's a range of what are some form of grants in the system. Obviously, that's a much harder area, and that's dealt with the committee that's dealing with appropriations and those measures. So whether they've even partially covered by those measures, I don't know. But I think, as we've said before, for this COVID crisis, we just got to continue to see the impact. And, Chair, if you ask me personally, I think this is going to be going on, you know, like the President and ministers have said, it's going to be going on for a while until we have the vaccine. So, you know, I think that you're going to be looking even at next year, June, October, because even if there's a vaccine, say, by the end of the year that we take on, and that our health authorities have considered to be safe, you're probably looking at the end of the year, and then we still have to roll it out to millions of people. Now, I'm no health expert, but I'm sure that's going to take us quite a few months, even if we had it all ready to be done by the end of December. So we have to really keep a watching eye, and hence we've come and said this is the second round, this is the third round, and so on. So the measures we have today, Chair, so to put them in perspective again, is just complementing the March and April measures. With regard to the question from Honorable Hill Lewis, I did say that those are issues that people will face when they assess whether they've been here a sufficient number of days or away a sufficient number of days. And we will try and provide an initial response tomorrow, but we will formally then have a second round of small T-lab measures as we see how things pan out. And just to give you an example, Chair, so when we did these measures, for example, we still didn't know what would happen with the tobacco and alcohol industry. And as when we did these documents, they were still banned. Obviously, there's a new situation now that they've been unbanned from midnight or this morning. And whilst I think the measures still need to be in place for those industries going forward, we'd have to monitor the approach of government as related to COVID, what further measures that may be necessary for any industry. So I'm just trying to say that whatever we put down, in a sense, may or may not be outdated, in a sense, because there's new things happening all the time. But Chair, yeah, so I don't know if France wants to come in, or Yanga, or Chris, but I think that those measures can be commented on tomorrow. Today's measures, as I said, is just for the March and April announcements and just extending some of those measures. So what we have, Chair, are the two, I think they call the A bill for both the money bill itself, the tax bill, and the administration bill that we have, that members would have to go through. And you'd see that those just deal with all the extensions, because those are the changes that we're making to the original bills that were tabled by the Minister of Finance. Yanga, Chris, Frank, do you want to add on?
Not for me.
No, Momo Ken.
Nothing from my side.
Okay. That's the response from National Treasury through Ms. Momoniat. Let's move to item 4, deliberations on the Disaster Management Tax Relief Bill and Disaster Management Tax Administration. Alan, can you assist here? Item 4, is it not, was it not part of what we were discussing?
Yes, Chair, it is, but I think, I mean, it's obviously up to the committee to decide the course of action they take. Maybe Frank can also come in here, but that should be clause by clause deliberation. So it's clause 1 from Bill 11 up to whatever clauses, and then wherever the proposed amendments are, Treasury or maybe even Frank can come in just to highlight that that's where the amendment will fit in for both goals.
Okay. Advocate Jenkins, can you give guidance? Advocate Jenkins? Is he online, Alan? Jenkins?
I'm just trying to check. I'll just give him a call quickly.
Sir?
Yes. Honorable Abram?
Yes, sir. Just as Alan is still checking the presenters, can I just check, because I do not want to leave this message and find tomorrow that it was in fact relevant for today. It's actually two questions for me. The first one, sir, is on how Treasury is assisting with the monitoring of the PPE funding when it comes to specifically public servants doing business with government, public servants in their capacity as business owners doing business with government. And the second area for me, Chair, is the area of the funds that government has given out to assist and the funds were given out through the banks. And remember, COSATU was complaining that a very minimal amount has been accessed from the banks. And this is due to the fact that although we are in the COVID-19 environment, the banks have not relaxed their own regulations of borrowing the entrepreneurs. Can they talk to that, Chair, please? Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Honorable Abram. Treasury, can you respond to that question raised by Honorable Abram? Alan, you will indicate when Frank will have connected.
Yes, Chair, Frank is on.
Okay, let's take a question from Honorable Abram. Over to you, Treasury, then Frank will come up.
Okay, Chair. No, thank you, Chair. Chair, you know, it's dangerous to ask me what happening on the spending side, because our team here, we're all involved on the tech side, and but I am involved in the financial sector side, so I'll take this. I can answer the second question more definitely, but just on the first one, I know that the minister and the DG are leading a process, obviously, and the president has appointed the panel of ministers, so they are looking at how to deal with the disgraceful and shameful acts that we've seen of corruption over PPEs and so on. And I think that that matter is normally dealt with in the Appropriations Committee. I'm not involved, so I may be wrong, but I know that when they were in Parliament recently, was it last week, in the hearings that were convened by SCOF and SCOA, and CECOP, that they raised some of those issues. So I know there's a process in place to deal with such type of tender fraud and also dealing with politically connected persons and how those matters are dealt with. But I am, you know, I think we can get our department then to deal with that. But there is a process with Parliament, as you are aware, that's going on. I think that with regard to the second, it just relates to what I said earlier, Chair, that it would be good for us to talk on the credit guarantee scheme and to brief the committee, because I think that there's a lot of expectations out there. The banks are obviously putting their own, or as someone corrected me last week in another meeting with the tourism sector, that the funds the banks have are depositor savings. And the way the credit guarantee scheme is that we do what we hope that banks will take a bit more risk and lend to more companies, that small businesses that are in trouble. But the loans still have to be paid. And what we're finding is that many businesses actually don't want to take on further debt on the one hand. And on the other hand, and mainly because if you're a restaurant, you've lost your income. You're never going to get that income back again. So taking on a loan to pay your operational costs, the business may feel that it's almost impossible to pay that loan. So they are obviously looking for other forms of more appropriate help, whatever that is. On the bank side, to the extent that they're going to lend, they're still going to have some criteria. Now, maybe their credit committee has relaxed some of the criteria, maybe not. That each bank has to answer for itself. But they will point out if the money that's under their care that they have to lend out, and they have to be convinced that they're going to be paid. The government guarantee that's there is not a guarantee that kicks in immediately, because we sort of want to prevent the problem that the banks also don't go and make lots of reckless loans. And ultimately, we're hopeful that we're not going to go anywhere near 100 billion or 200 billion that actually called on in terms of a guarantee, because then the funds will have to come from the fiscus. So that's just a quick explanation for now. But as I said, Chair, we're happy to come and go through the detail with you on how the credit guarantee scheme works. But as I said earlier as well, that no scheme is going to be able to deal with the real problems that many companies have and other individuals. It will deal with some of them, and partially probably, but it's certainly not going to compensate anyone for the full losses. And that's why, I mean, we are saying this COVID is a disaster, and I think we hope that we can reduce the number of businesses that will be forced out of business as a result of COVID. So, Chair, I'll stop there on that one.
Okay. Thanks, Mumu. Let's go back to Advocate Jenkins. It's in relation to item 4. Can you give clarity with the deliberations on the disaster management tax relief bill and disaster management tax administration bill? What process do we have to follow here?
Good morning, Chair. Thank you. Firstly, my apologies. I just had to pop into the Transport Committee dealing with a bill there as well. Chair, once the committee has, I would say, agreed to consider the amendments, as my understanding is at this point in time, then they proceed from there. That's sort of a policy matter. Then they proceed on the clause by clause on the bill. So we can go clause by clause, including the amendments, Chair. So as the bills are amended, and then the committee just goes clause by clause, and if one is happy with that, then it's the motion of desirability and the report, Chair. Thank you very much. I hope it assists.
Okay. No, thanks, Advocate Jenkins. So, disaster management tax relief bill and disaster management. What do I have here? Disaster management tax relief administration bill. Okay. The one that I have here has got four clauses. Is it so, Alan? Okay, you'll open it on the screen.
Yes, Chair. I'm just trying to open Bill 11. That's the Disaster Management Tax Relief Bill. Can members just indicate if it is on screen?
Not yet. We just see a list of bills.
Okay.
But if you can punch on the disaster management tax relief so that it can show on the screen. It's Bill 11.
Yes, Chair, there's Bill 11 and then Bill 12. I'm not sure if the committee will start with 11 or 12, but it's obviously up to them to decide.
Okay. Let's start with Bill 11. Disaster Management Tax Relief Bill, B11 2020. So,
sorry, Chair, is it on screen?
Yes. I can see it from my side. Okay. Yeah, there's something wrong with the screen here. Definitions and interpretation. Any comments? That's clause one, definitions and can you go up? Let's do, what is, go down and see it properly from this side. No, see, you use the spectacles. I think you use it better. My spectacles are not here. Where's clause 2? Alan, what is clause 2?
Chair, clause 2, I've just projected it on screen. It's amendment of Section 1 of Act 26 of 2013 as amended by Section 112 of Act 43 of 2014, Section 93 of Act 15 of 2016, Section 101 of Act 23 of 2018, and Section 78 of Act 34 of 2019.
Okay, it has got subsection 1, A, B. Honorable members, that's clause 2, Section 1, A and B. Okay, go up. Wait, Mr. Mumunias, are you raising a hand?
Yes, Chair. You know,
yes.
I always say I don't like to wish my worst enemies to read the tax amendment bill clause by clause. And I say this because, bear in mind, Chair, that any tax laws that you see amendments against an act that's been there for decades. If you would like, Chair, if it helps, Yana can talk you through each clause and just tell you what it is. Otherwise, I promise you, there's nothing like these tax laws. They're very complicated about how they insert changes. But she could put it in plain English because she's got an explanatory memo which allows us non-lawyers then to go through it. And she can also then point out, as Ellen has said, the sections where there's going to be an amendment because we're changing the dates. So if you would like, she could assist you, Chair.
Okay. Thanks, Mr. Moon. Clause 2. Yanga, are you able to summarize in a minute or two so that I can hand over to members to comment or ask questions?
Clause 2 refers to the amendment for the employment tax incentives, whereby we were given relief to in terms of the Employment Tax Incentive Act. Thanks, Chair.
Okay. Members, are there comments or questions? Alan, can we move to 2? We have set 1, A and B. Two. There we are. Let's move to clause 3.
Clause 3, amendment to Section 4 of the Employment Tax Incentive Act also is the relief for the ETI, whereby we have to align with the national minimum wage. Thank you, Chair. And also the hours of work.
Yana, can you request Comrade Momo to put his hand down? It's ever up. Oh, yeah.
Apologies, Chair.
Technology, Comrade Momo, you can't cope with it. It's moving very fast. Members, do we have comments and questions on Clause 3?
Has there been a penalty for non-compliance, Chair, where it comes to Section 3?
Okay. Over to you, Sam, National Treasurer. That's the question from Honorable Abraham.
I think penalty for non-compliance, what happened is that I think France has to answer here because that is an administration issue. Let me not go before France. Thanks.
Okay, France, can you attend to the issue, question raised by Honorable Abraham in regard to penalty?
So, thank you, Chair. The issue here is whether you qualify or don't. So if you don't qualify, you don't get the incentive. I don't think there's an issue of penalties directly here.
Okay. Are you clarified, Honorable?
Okay, maybe the question put in another way. Has there been accuracy in ensuring that if you qualify, you get an incentive? That's where I'm at. If you qualify, you get an incentive. And then, if you qualify and the incentive is not given, what then becomes the consequence?
Okay. Over to you, Treasurer. And first, a follow-up question from Honorable Abra.
Should I try this time, Colin?
Go ahead.
Okay, good morning, Chair. Good morning, Honourable Members.
So the incentive for the employment tax incentive in this regard, it's all done on a self-assessment basis. So all those firms that apply for the incentive each month, they would apply on their own accord. So they would check that they meet the criteria and they would apply the incentive, and they'd be able to reduce the pay as you earn that they owe to SARS immediately without SARS having to do a pre-qualification check. So we did it this way to try and get the incentive into the hands of businesses as quickly as possible. Only after the incentive has been claimed, if SARS finds out that they were actually not eligible because they didn't meet some of the criteria, then would there be clawbacks and potentially penalties and interest. But initially they can claim it themselves. Thanks.
Is it Chris speaking or who is speaking? I can't see members. I mean, people
yes,
are speaking.
Yes, Chair, that was Chris. Thanks, Chair.
Thanks, Chris. Okay. Let's move to the next slot, Alan. Slot 4.
Clause 4 also deals with the ETI in terms of the applicable date of the incentive, that is 1 October 2013. So those are the relief measures that we have done for ETI to say when it is applicable to employers employed during which period. Thank you.
Thanks. Members, questions, comments? Okay. Next clause, Alan.
Clause 5 deals with the actual calculation and the formula of the amount to be claimed for ETI. It all goes to clause 5, that is from page 8 and page 9. That is all the formula and the amount to be claimed in terms of the ETI based on the COVID-19 tax relief measures, because those amounts were adjusted.
Okay. Honorable members, questions, comments on clause 5? Thanks. The next clause, Alan?
Clause 6 refers to the period in which the employer is required to render a return. That is also the employment tax incentive.
Okay. Honorable members, that's clause 6. Questions, comments? Clause 7?
Clause 7 relates to the COVID-19 Disaster Relief Organization, whereby we are giving relief for tax exemption. And it is in this clause whereby we propose to change the dates. That is on clause 7, line 47, of which whereby we change the effective date of 31 July to 30 September 2020. So each and every effective date on clause 7, which is 31 July 2020, that effective date will be changed to 30 September 2020. Those are the amendments that were proposed by the minister in the letter, Chair.
Thanks. Questions, comments, members? Next clause, Alan?
Clause 8 also deals with the Solidarity Fund, the tax exemption for Solidarity Fund. Also in this scenario, the proposed amendment in Clause 8, here we change the date of 31 July to 30 September, because Solidarity Fund also falls under the COVID-19 Relief Fund as well. Thank you, Chair.
We still have an outstanding meeting with the Solidarity Fund. we'll have to find a date, Alan, let's follow up that we should meet them, and they should come together with the treasurer so that we understand what they are doing. We are not saying that they are doing their work behind the veil of secret, but it's not clear what they are doing. So they would have to come before the committee. Are there comments on clause 8 or questions? Clause 9?
Clause 9, Chair, is also here. We are also proposing to change the date from 31 July to 30 September because it also relates to COVID-19 relief funds. This provision deals with the issue whereby the COVID-19 relief funds will be giving loans to the small businesses. However, those loans will be paid as salaries to individuals. So clause 9 deals with that. And here also we are changing the effective date from 31 July to 30 September because it relates to the COVID-19 relief funds measures that are proposed by the minister.
Thanks. Members, questions, comments? Okay. Clause 10?
Clause 10 deals with the temporary exemption from skills development levy whereby one of the COVID-19 measures was to request an exemption from 1 May to 31 August. As we have said in the response document last week on the 28th of July, here this extension is not, this relief is not going to be extended. So that deals with that, Chair. There are no changes in this clause.
Okay. Honourable members, clause 10.
Clause 10, oh, sorry.
We've dealt with clause 10, and then application, that's clause 11.
Clause 11 deals with the fact that in terms of to whom does this section apply, like the taxpayers, it applies to those taxpayers, for instance, the ETI, that were registered with SARS as of 25 March 2020, the date of the beginning of the lockdown. So clause 11 mostly deals with the ETI application, Chair.
Okay. Members, questions, comments on clause 11? And clause 12 is the title of the bill. That's it. Then, advocate friend, where to from here? Do we adopt the bill or we have just considered it or what's the next step?
Chair, if I can just come in, it's Alan.
Yes,
sorry, Frank. So the committee is today deliberating and then the committee will formally adopt the bills tomorrow. Zakhele is still in the process of doing the reports, and then the reason for only adoption tomorrow is because if anything came out of today that needed to go into the report, then you know there's sufficient time to do so. So the committee formally goes through clause by clause, and then tomorrow it's just a matter of adopting the report with the bills and with the amendments.
Okay. Does the clarity? I think we are done with the deliberations on the... We're dealing with B11, so now we are going to B12. Alan?
Yes, Chair, I'm just putting that on the screen quickly.
Oh.
Is it on screen?
Yes. Okay. Clause 1, definition. I think they are self-explanatory. Let's move to clause 2. Uh, Okay, close to deferral of employees tax. Madam Young.
This is dealt by Services and Administration Bill. France will lead chair. Thank you.
Okay, France, over to you.
Sorry about that, Chair. I had the video on, but not the microphone. My apologies. So this is the clause that permits the deferral of 35% of the employees' tax. And there is the proposal for this clause to extend it to run until the end of August, as opposed to the 31st of July, and then for the repayment to start later and to close later. So that is clause two.
Members, questions, comments on clause two? Okay, let's move to clause three.
All right, Chair. So this clause deals with the postponement of 35% of provisional tax payments by businesses that qualify for it, and essentially that permits an extension, a deferral of 35% of either the first or the second provisional tax payment, whichever is appropriate, and then that is caught up by the third provisional tax payment, which comes later.
Okay, members, clause three. Alan, let's move to the next clause.
All right, so thank you, Chair. Clause four does the same, but now for what are known as micro businesses. They have a slightly different provisional tax system, so they get the same relief, but it has to be phrased somewhat differently because there is a simpler basis that they work on. This is also one of the clauses where there's the small cross-referencing correction proposed.
Next clause, five.
Thank you, Chair. So clause five is the one that permits employers to take donations to the Solidarity Fund into account when calculating employees' tax. You have to deduct at the end of the year. What it does is it allows the amount that is donated to be taken into account for employee tax purposes, so this assists people who make the tax.
Okay, members, clause five. Okay, next clause six.
Clause six, this is an amendment that proposes to allow vendors to only put their VAT returns in every 2 months to voluntarily put their VAT returns in once a month. The idea here is to unlock VAT refunds more quickly so that those vendors who are expecting refunds don't have to wait 2 months for the refund, they can get it more quickly.
Okay, members, six. Next clause, Alan. Clause seven.
So clause seven is to make provision for extensions of time for the period of the hard lockdown that we were under in March and April.
Okay. A short title and the commencement. Okay. I think we're done with the issues. And then, what's the next item, Alan? Those were the two bills that we had to consider, isn't it? B11 and B12. Alan?
Sorry, Jay. Yes, that was it. As I said earlier, it's just that Zakhele is still drafting a report that should be available sometime today. And then we scheduled another meeting for tomorrow where the committee will formally adopt or consider and adopt the bills and the committee report on both bills. And then also the informal briefing on the TLAB and TELAB bills.
Okay. Dr. Sope, do you want to say something in regard to the process?
Yes, Chair, I will send out the report to you today by 3 p.m. and then you can have a look at it, then it can be sent to members.
Okay. Yes. Thanks, Dr. Klopper.
Yeah, but I just need one clarity from Advocate Jenkins with regards to the motion of disability. Can you just clarify me on that?
Frank.
Maybe Alan can correct me, but usually there's a motion of desirability, which is just precedes the adoption of the report in terms of the rules. That's what I meant. Maybe on tax books it's different, but certainly on the 75 bills, that's what we've been doing, Chair. We before we adopt the report, we just take a motion of desirability that the bill is what we want it to be.
Okay, thanks, sir.
Okay. Before we close, Treasury, Momo and the team, Yanga, there is a letter from Honorable Lewis. I think I should read it to you so that it should not look like I've been taken the matter up. He wrote a letter to me in regard to the briefing on the Mpathi Commission of inquiry on the PIC, that it has been more than 2 months since this meeting was postponed because Treasury needed to complete some urgent consultation. When will this important committee meeting be held? And how long can this consultation possibly take? I look forward to hearing from you. God, Jordan Hill Lewis. Any take from Treasury in regard to the letter from Honorable Lewis? I'm the messenger this time, because you remember last time we should have had the meeting. The minister wrote us, I think it was the DG, if I'm not mistaken, a note to indicate that they are still working on some issues, getting legal opinions on how to implement the report. So a member of the committee will want to know as to when can we get the minister to come and present. Or maybe before you, Momo, let me allow Lewis. E. Lewis to speak for himself. E. Lewis, can you speak on your letter? before I close the meeting?
Yes.
And before Treasury responds. Yeah, 2 minutes.
Yes, over sure, to Chair, the brief note is quite self-explanatory, but essentially that meeting was cancelled at the last minute on the 1st of June, when we were supposed to have it on the 2nd of June. And we were told that the Treasury needed to still complete some urgent last-minute consultations with stakeholders, and there wasn't much detail given. And since then, we've heard nothing further about that briefing. It's obviously a crucial briefing. That Mpathi Commission report has been out now for, off the top of my head, probably 9 months already, maybe slightly shorter than that, 7 to 9 months. And I'd really like to schedule that briefing as soon as possible to get stuck into the detail of the Mpathi report and what's going to happen as a result of it. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Lewis. Over to you, Mr. Mumu.
Okay, Chair. Again, this is not something I deal with directly in my job at Treasury. Chair, if I can come back to you tomorrow, I'll check with the DG and the relevant DDG, Sabiso. Can I come back to you tomorrow on this?
Okay. Thanks. Thanks, honorable members of the committee, officials from Parliament, Treasury, Trust. The meeting is adjourned. We'll meet again tomorrow. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.